Yeah.
You said that the Morris at the beginning that there are no things called instincts.
Yeah.
And that they arise from, come from outside, astral.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, could karma be interpreted as instincts?
Well, karma is not an instinct. We are not born with karma. They are also really the asavas, which are really coming from outside. The important thing is to understand that all this is simply a reaction of an organism to environmental stimulation. That is how we have to understand it. We are organisms in an environment, and the environment is stimulating the organism. And the organism reacts to this. That reaction is what we call the karma. And it is happening unconsciously. We are not consciously doing it. It is happening unconsciously. And that unconsciousness is what is called avijja. Now the word avijja is today translated as ignorance. Unconsciousness is the meaning of the word avijja. Not ignorance. Ignorance means knowing, not knowing certain facts or something like that. But that is not the meaning of avijja. Avijja is something that disappears only when you become an arahant. That means the last stage, avijja disappears. Because that is the time that you begin to become fully conscious. That becoming fully conscious is what is called awakening. We are awakening from the dream of existence, really. Existence is really what is called bhava. Bhava means existence. Today, people translate bhava as becoming. These are all English people who came and translated these things. They compared some of these concepts to what Socrates said or Aristotle said or some of these Western philosophers used certain words. They thought this is what the Buddha is also trying to say. And so they translated bhava as becoming. But that is not the meaning of the word bhava. Bhava is existence. Now when we say in Pali, the book is or the book exists. How do we say? Pottakam bhavati. Pottakam bhavati. Pottakam means the book. Bhavati is it exists or it is. The book is. You see, the word bhava is not becoming. Why they use the word becoming was because the Buddha was speaking about impermanence. So, the Buddha cannot be speaking about existence because existence is not permanent. It is something like permanence. But here, the Buddha is speaking about existence when he is using the word bhava. It is because people are all the time thinking in terms of permanence. People don't think in terms of impermanence. We go for a permanent job, we want to get a permanent marriage, we want to get permanent everything. We want to get a permanent income, permanent life. We want to live forever, we don't want to die. That is permanence. That is the bhava. We are hanging on to this concept of permanence all the time. And that is why people always want a thing called a soul. Why are they thinking of a thing called soul? Why are they thinking of a thing called God? God is also the permanent one. And the soul is also the permanent one. And when we die, we must remain permanent as a soul, so that the soul will remain although the body dies. So this whole concept of permanence, we are getting hold on to. And that is the bhava. Yeah?
I had a question. Now, when Swaminathan said that karma was actually the organisms reacting to the environment,
yeah,
how can karma be a cause and effect if it's just the effect that's taking place? Because if it's just we are constantly reacting, shouldn't an effect have a preceding cause? That cannot be just a soul.
You see the reaction as an effect.
There has to be a cause and effect. The karma cannot just be a reaction taking place.
Oh yes. So you think the reaction has no cause? Do you think that reaction doesn't have a cause?
No, it just seems like the way I explained is just everything just keeps happening because when you say it's reacting.
No. Reaction means everything that is happening means, you see, if I push this clock, it will fall. And that is a happening. That doesn't mean that it didn't have a cause. When you speak of happening, we are not talking about things that happen without causes. Everything that happens has a cause, not one cause. Even the word cause is not correct, because this, when we speak of a cause, we are only talking about one cause. These are conditions. Several conditions are necessary for something to happen. Several conditions are necessary. This is why the Buddha said, Chakkuncha paticcha rupecha upajjati chakku vinyanam. Now that itself, there are two conditions necessary. The I must be there, and the what is seen must be there, and then arises the seeing of it. The seeing itself is the reaction of the organism. So the stimulus is the cause of the reaction. If there is no stimulus, there can't be a reaction. And to have a stimulus, there must be a sense organ. If there is no sense organ, the stimulus alone can't cause the reaction. So you need both. The sense organ must be there, the stimulus must be there, and then the stimulation must be happening, and then there is the reaction. So it is always having certain conditions necessary for something to happen. This is the meaning of paticca samuppada. Paticca samuppada means the law of determinism. Determinism means everything that happens in the world happens due to the presence of the necessary conditions. That is the law of determinism. And that law of determinism is what the Buddha taught as the paticca samuppada.
But when you use the word determinism, doesn't that exclude the idea of, you know, the initial... when you use determinism, doesn't that kind of portray fate?
Huh?
Doesn't determinism...
That is, you are talking about predeterminism. Now, whenever I use the word determinism, everyone begins to think of predeterminism. Predeterminism is a different thing. Predeterminism means there is God or some cause did this. That is predeterminism. This is determinism. Determinism means that something to happen, certain number of conditions are necessary. If you want to get a flame, you strike a match. But striking the match is not the only thing here. There must be the gunpowder in the matchstick. And there must be the friction there. And there must be the oxygen in the air. And so many things must be there for that flame to come up. So one condition can't produce everything. There are the necessary conditions. There are several necessary conditions. And all those necessary conditions must be present for something to happen. That is the law of determinism.
I have a question about perception. You said that our reactions, we react to the external stimuli in the environment.
Yeah.
And when we react, for us to react, we must have what is called perception.
No. You are talking about a different kind of reaction. Perception itself is the reaction. The reaction to stimulation. When light falls on the eye, that stimulates the eye. And the reaction is seeing. That is the perception.
Is that the only kind of reaction that human beings show?
That is only the first part of the reaction.
Okay.
The first part of the reaction is seeing. Then the second part of the reaction is interpreting what you see.
Right.
And the third part of the reaction is the emotional reaction to what has been seen.
Right. So if you are going to interpret it, then you have to have perception, right? Because if I see a wild animal,
you interpret what you have perceived.
Right. So I'm trying to understand. So without say, for instance, I'll explain it with an example.
Yeah.
If I see a wild animal.
Yeah.
Now I know that I have perceived by my prior experience.
Yeah.
That the wild animal can attack me.
That's
so
right.
I will have adrenaline in my body. That is a reaction.
That's right.
So I will have have all the strength that I need to survive and to fight back or whatever.
Yeah.
So now that perception created that reaction in my blood because I had the perception that this is a wild animal, dangerous.
Yeah. That's
now right. I am wondering, can we change? I mean, not to change about this particular person, but I'm thinking about. Is it possible for us to change the perception? Work on the perception. For instance, if we see a nice, when we are asleep, if we see a nice bed, I mean, you think of sleeping on that bed and sort of being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But, so that is a perception we have because we have slept on a nice bed, so we know what the bed is. If a person has never slept on a bed, he has all his life, he has never seen a bed and only slept on the floor, then he doesn't have the perception of that bed. So that
doesn't have the perception?
Yeah, he doesn't know anything about a bed. When he sees a bed, nothing comes to his mind.
A person who has never seen a bed.
Yeah, he has not heard or seen, or he doesn't know what a bed is.
Yeah.
So then he doesn't have the perception of what a bed is for him to think, oh, it's nice if I can sleep on this. Because all he knows is that...
You are now using the word in the wrong way. You see, there is a difference between a percept and a concept. Now, you are using the word percept refer to the concept.
Concept, okay.
Concept is the interpretation.
And the percept is?
Is the seeing. You see something there. That seeing, seeing is the percept. And what you saw, you have never experienced before.
Okay,
so you are not able to form a concept about it. That's the difference.
And the two parts of the mind, citta and vijnana, they usually work together. Am I right?
No.
They're separate.
No. Vijnana is the perception.
Okay.
Mano is the conception, the interpretation, and chitta is the emotion.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to understand is, how do these three parts relate to each other? Now, you explained that mano is the thinking part, and the chitta is the part that we show emotion on.
Yeah.
And vijnana...
These are not permanent things. First, you have to understand that this is simply a reaction, and reaction is an activity. It's not an entity. And as an activity, it is just an impermanent thing. It's like a wave coming and going.
Goes,
So the first activity is the perception. Then the second activity is the interpretation of the percept. And the third activity is the emotional arousal.
But they can remain in the mind.
Remain in the
recall them.
That is the memory part.
Yeah.
Memory is not really a storehouse. Now this is also very important to understand. Most people think that memory is a storehouse. There is nothing, there is no storage in the mind. Memory works through association of ideas. One idea is associated with another idea. That is associated with another one. That is associated with another one. So you can go through that chain of ideas. And that is how you get the memory. Relationships. The more you can see relationships, the more you can keep things in memory. If you want to remember something, you have to see the relationships. By relating things only, you can keep it as a memory. But memory doesn't mean it's a storage.
But where does it stay?
Huh?
Where does it stay?
It doesn't stay anywhere. It doesn't stay anywhere. These are all activities, not entities. The only entity that you can talk about is the brain. What we call the mind is the activity of the brain. Nothing else. You see, even a thing like recording a picture in a camera, like this, or a tape recorder, that is an activity, it's not an entity. There is no real storage there. Now, some of you are engineers, you should know some of these things. That all these electronic things, the computer is the computer is there, what is called the
process.
Hardware and the software. Yeah, hardware is that whole computer thing, but the software is all activity there. There is no real thing there. We are not talking about anything. So the body and the mind is like the hardware and the software. What we call the mind is the software. It's like that.
So is it correct to say that in this whole world there's only matter and activity, nothing else?
This is why what the scientists are saying, there is matter and energy. Energy is the activity part and matter is the entity part. But they are also trying to say that energy and matter are the same thing. There is no real difference.
Because matter, when matter breaks down, you get energy.
Yeah, not only that, that matter is another slow form of energy. there is no big difference between matter and energy. Now, that's why they tried to find out whether it is subatomic particles there, the particles or waves. They were talking about waves and not particles. Even electrons, protons, these are even waves. So, what is matter and what is energy after all? And energy after all is, what is energy if you try to define energy? According to Newton's laws, energy is the capacity for work. Work is to bring one body from one place to another place. That is what is called work. And the capacity to work is what is called energy. So, what is energy after all? There is no entity there.
Any more questions?
Mm-hmm.
Only one. Yeah, only one.
Nikki has one question. One question.
You have a question.
Yes.
Yeah?
There are books and classes on the practice of gratitude.
And gratitude?
Gratitude, right. And people journal and they think about things they're grateful for to help with their positive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered about your understanding of the benefit of that activity.
Well, gratitude, you see, I think this is a term created by some people who want other people to do things that they want done. You see, it is like justice. Justice is, you see, is a wild, justice, you see, wait. Now they say that revenge is a wild form of justice. You have heard that. But I would say justice is a noble form of revenge. You see? So gratitude is also a thing like that. A person does something to another person and finds that the other person is not returning that good deed. And then they say, oh, that person has no gratitude. So that means this person is expecting a return for what he did. That is like investing money, you see. You put money into a business and you want something to get something out of it. Now when you really help another person, you have to forget about gratitudes. You are helping that person because you want to help another person. And that person's wish is what he will do. Now, the Buddha, now these are explained in some of these Jataka stories. You see where there is a story where the Buddha was in some previous life, was born as a monkey. And then some hunter came with a bow and arrow and shot this monkey with the arrow, and the monkey started bleeding. But this monkey also saw that there were some other people coming to kill that man who shot him. Right? So what the monkey did was, he wanted to prevent or save that man from being killed. And what he did was, he used his blood that was dropping from his body to show the direction to go. And the monkey started running and the hunter had to pursue the monkey. And by pursuing the monkey, escaped being shot by those other people. So in other words, he returned good for evil. He didn't try to take revenge on that person. And so he was not thinking in terms of gratitude or revenge. You see, so gratitude and revenge are very similar things when you think of this. These are things that human beings create. It's an expression of their emotions. Did you understand that?
I think so.
Shall we?